If we go back in history, the one president who seems to be on everyone's mind, from Barack Obama to Steven Spielberg, is Abraham Lincoln.
In the face of impossible odds, people who love their country can change it. That's what Abraham Lincoln understood. He had his doubts. He had his defeats. He had his skeptics. He had his setbacks. But through his will and his words, he moved a nation.
All this talk about Lincoln made us want to dip into our own archives to sample a few interviews with historians such as Orville Vernon Burton.
Lincoln's greatest contribution was not what he said it was. He said it was the Emancipation Proclamation. He says that's going to be the greatest legacy of his life and of his administration in the 19th century. But I think what Lincoln really did was to put personal liberty into the Constitution. He took the Founding Fathers' ideas and visions and really placed the Declaration of Independence into the Constitution. And I think that's Lincoln's greatest legacy. It was his commitment to liberty. Lincoln understood that democracy is not static and was committed to making it work. And I think it was through his leadership that it has survived and has gone on to, in fact, inspire not just us in the United States, but the rest of the world.
You know, today, just about everyone admires something about Abraham Lincoln.
Mr. Lincoln himself? Oh, I mean, this was a man that self-taught, self-educated, and he put it to good use. He was a powerful individual.
I'm from South Carolina. A lot of ourselves we'd like to be in Lincoln. His strength and tenacity. A lot of people would have caved during the Civil War, what he had to endure. Just tenacity and strength and strong will.
Just the man himself. I mean, you know, all the tragedies in his life and he persevered on, you know, which you have to do, but just, it doesn't matter where you end up in life or how great you are, tragedy's always behind you and you go on.
Visitors and staff at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum in Springfield, Illinois.
Lincoln understood that the country was in peril because right after he won the general election, the southern states started seceding. So there was a sense of worry in the country that the country was falling apart.
Historian Doris Kearns Goodwin, author of Team of Rivals, the classic study of how Lincoln appointed his political rivals to key posts in his cabinet.
And they all, I think, accept in part for two reasons. One, they know, too, the country's in peril and they feel compelled to be part of the struggle. But also they probably think they're going to be able to control him, that they'll be able to be like the prime ministers and he'll be a figurehead. And he somehow understands, as he later said, that these are the strongest guys in the country, and I owe it to the country to put them in. But he also knew by having them right there in the cabinet that it would mean that he'd have all the range of opinion that he needed to govern the Northern Coalition, because they were former Democrats, former Whigs, former Liberty Party people, abolitionists, conservatives, and it meant he had to sharpen his thinking every single day as he met with this raucous group in the cabinet.
Seward was the one that everybody expected to be the candidate for the presidency, and therefore it would appear least likely to be willing to accept this position from Lincoln as Secretary of State. Is he the one you're referring to mostly when you say that he thought he could control Lincoln?
At first, he'd actually sent a memo to Lincoln suggesting that things were drifting in the administration in those first weeks after Lincoln was inaugurated, and that if he needed somebody to sort of direct things, he, Seward, would take the job. Lincoln very clearly and shrewdly said to him, if anyone's going to control things, it is me. That is my job. But instead of firing him or berating him, he just accepted that Seward had overstepped his bounds. Once he learned that, Seward did, within a couple months, he was writing to his wife and saying, Lincoln is the best of us all, and they have become these incredible friends.
What about Edward Stanton? He didn't run for the presidency, but he was another of these men who thought he could control Lincoln, opposed Lincoln, didn't trust Lincoln, and eventually became one of his greatest supporters.
Actually, Stanton's story of the transformation in his attitude toward Lincoln is in some ways the most remarkable, because when they had first met, they were lawyers in the 1850s. Stanton was a nationally known lawyer, Lincoln known only in Illinois. And Stanton from Ohio had a huge patent case that was supposed to be tried in Illinois. So they brought Lincoln on board just of counsel. Lincoln was so excited, the idea that he'd be working with Stanton. It was a big retainer, a very big case for him. He worked all summer on it. Stanton apparently took one look at Lincoln and saw his disheveled hair and his trousers too short and a stain on his shirt and said to his partner, "We've got to get rid of this long-armed ape. He will hurt our cause." They never opened the brief that Lincoln had painstakingly prepared. They didn't eat with him in the tavern or the boarding house. And then, 6 years later, in 1861, when his first Secretary of War fails, everybody says, "Stanton's the man for the job." He somehow is able to put that grudge behind him and that hurt and appoint him to that job. And they do become great allies, great friends. Stanton loves him more than anyone outside his family. Even though they were a very odd couple, they worked very well together.
For all its greatness, there is a lingering question about Lincoln. Was he the great emancipator or a closet racist who freed the slaves because he needed their help to win the war? Harvard historian John Stauffer says, from the perspective of today,
Lincoln was a racist, but so was just about every other white man and woman of the 1850s. The best way to understand Lincoln is that he was a Southerner. He grew up in a sense a border state in Kentucky, Illinois, and Indiana. And so he was a Southerner, but a Southerner who evolved far beyond what most Southerners did. Most poor white Southerners were virulently racist. W.B. Du Bois wonderfully said that Lincoln began poor white trash, but unlike most of his peers, he rose above it.
So that's really the remarkable story about Lincoln. He came out of this background, and yet he changed his thinking dramatically while he was president.
Exactly. When he became president, when he gave his inaugural address, his relationship with blacks was still profoundly distant. The closest Frederick Douglass ever came to losing his faith in American democracy and emigrating to Haiti was in the immediate wake of Lincoln's inaugural. Douglass ended up meeting Lincoln three times in the White House. He was the first black to meet a U.S. president in terms of near equality. Lincoln was very taken with Douglass. They became friends.
You have a phrase to describe Lincoln. You call him a recovering racist.
Yes. And to see Lincoln that way is not to disparage him. I think too many Americans continue to mythologize Lincoln, to see him as perfect. And so to see Lincoln as a recovering racist is to put him in his time and his place. But also, I think ultimately, it means that we have greater respect for him because we see how far he was able to come.
Some reflections from historians John Stauffer, Doris Kearns Goodwin, and Orville Vernon Burton.